2009 ACB National Convention Report, Part 2. By Donna Pomerantz and Jetham. Editor's note, read the Fall, 2009 BC 4 Part 1. Tuesday's final presentation, on access to sidewalks, and intersections, was given by a star-studded cast, including two panelists, who are no strangers to CCB, Lucas Frank, from the Seeing Eye and Researcher Extraordinaire Janet Barlow from Asheville, North Carolina, and they were joined by Diane Kitts, an orientation and mobility instructor from Orlando. Diane began by discussing research findings related to signalized intersections and accessible pedestrian signals, APS. She discussed the challenges of designing intersections to keep traffic moving and accommodating pedestrians. In downtown areas, signals will be pre- or fixed-timed, and the length of each cycle will be predictable. She stated that in other locations, signals will be traffic-actuated, where they respond to vehicle traffic. In some instances where there is a major and minor street, only the major street is traffic-actuated, and when there are two major streets, both are. Page 29. Traffic-actuated. Traffic-actuated signals will not give a pedestrian sufficient time to cross unless a button is pushed to activate it fully for pedestrians. Newer accessible pedestrian technology, which is integrated into the signal unit rather than being separate, and which contains locator tones, help solve problems related to the loudness of the signal and the inability to find its button. The vibrotactile arrow, also contained in these units, can be used to point to the direction to cross. Diane stated that their research findings recommend a rapid ticking sound be used for the walk indication, so it will be very distinct from the locator tone. She also mentioned that when advocating for an APS, make sure it is very close to the curb ramp, but for this from where the traffic is moving, and separated by at least 10 feet to determine which device to listen to. The research also indicated that if APS devices need to be Page 30. Installed on a single pole, and they are less than 10 feet apart, the speech message should be used rather than the ticking. Lucas discussed the countdown signals, whose use is rapidly growing. It's felt that asking for 100% information from these countdowns is not good because too much information might prevent us from hearing traffic and confuse us as to when to cross. Also, if we want to implement APSs on a mass scale, it's felt that countdowns will create noise pollution and a possible backlash. Janet discussed the increased use of roundabouts, emphasizing their advantages from a traffic calming and traffic moving efficiency perspective, and that they can reduce accidents. She stated that we need to advocate for them to be accessible to those who are blind and visually impaired. Changes in state and local laws to ensure that we have sufficient time to cross by requiring drivers to yield to us in a roundabout are crucial, as is the installation of pedestrian-activated APS devices, permitting sufficient time to safely cross. We should advocate for detectable warnings to help us find crosswalks. Our first speaker at Wednesday's general session was also someone that we know well in CCB, a former member and continued friend, Susan Mizrui, from AT&T. She commended Apple on its iPhone accessibility work, which, if you haven't seen it, we hope you can do at the Fall CCB convention. She also urged us to get involved in APS advocacy efforts and make sure that we as blind people get what we need in the telecommunications area. Kathy Nimmer of Indiana received the DeWard K. McDaniel Ambassador Award. This amazing lady, whose activities are too numerous to mention, told us that there's no need to be a super blind man or woman, just someone who wants to make a difference. On the 200th anniversary of Louis Braille's birthday, it was very appropriate to hear a discussion of its importance from Stephen Rothstein, head of the Perkins School for the Blind, the first in the nation, and celebrating its 180th anniversary. He asserted that when 90% of blind students are not learning Braille, we are failing. The reasons include the paradox that technology is creating disincentives for learning Braille, that mainstreaming which is such an outstanding thing, has led to more teachers of the visually impaired not knowing Braille, and medical advancements that create more blind children, who have challenges that make learning Braille harder. And there is a lack, page 31, of public awareness about the need for Braille. But Rothstein is an optimist, and the Perkins staff is working hard to ensure a brighter future for it. He then moderated a panel on schools for the blind. The first panelist was another former Californian, Phil Hetlin, who still finds his way here from time to time, one of the true pioneers in the field of education of students with visual impairments. He made the point that inclusive education was really started in the blindness field, and that those who work in schools for the blind must embrace and work with this model in order to stay relevant. While the Texas School for the Blind, where Hetlin worked before retiring, remains true to its mission as a residential school, it is expanding to help other blind students in Texas who are mainstreamed. Bob Beatles, from the Alabama School for the Deaf and Blind, discussed page 32 the economic factors that are leading to the consideration of closures of shared services with schools for the deaf. When legislators need to cut costs, it's tough to ensure that they consider all the outreach programs that many schools for the blind are doing. Outreach, early intervention services, work with local school districts, and other services are all important to keeping schools relevant and viable. He closed by noting that Perkins has become a regional program, and maybe this model is needed for schools to survive. Carl Jacobson of the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind was the final panelist. He spoke of the outstanding services provided by the Florida School. In closing the panel, Rothstein said that he hoped to work closely with ACB and others in ensuring that the complete spectrum of services continues to be available and that Schools for the Blind provides a center of excellence. Following the panel, Terry Kelly, Kim Charlson, and Judy Jackson, representing the Braille Revival League, led a celebration of Lewis Braille's birthday. Terry sang a song called Marcia Lewis. Scrumptious tactile birthday cookies were passed out to all in attendance, and happy birthday was sung. It's pretty hard to follow this act, but LJ Ganser, an Annales narrator from the American Foundation for the Blind, was more than up to the task. Pronouncing every word correctly is one of the most difficult tasks for a narrator, and even with all the experts and sources at his disposal, he has made mistakes on occasion. In fact, he said, that assuming you know how to pronounce something often causes the worst errors. In this digital era, however, making corrections is far easier than it was when audio tape was used. He mentioned various words whose official pronunciations are horrendous and should be changed. His early influences included being read to as a child and reading comic books, just as he now reads to his daughters. His incredible vocals cannot be given justice through the written word. When he reads a great book for an LS, he is more energized after finishing than before he started. Books that he's read range from Jurassic Park to Native Son, and to books in the Spencer Detective series. When he is recording something he can't stand, he tries to imagine a person who loves the book, and that helps him give it his best shot. His talk ended on a deeply somber note, as his career with AT&T and AFB is closing its studio later this year, since Annales can't even pay it enough to make it break even. He just hopes that something will happen to prevent this, because he and his colleagues love. Page 33. Doing this for us. The next panel was on the prevention of identity theft. Identity theft is a crime, and should be reported to law enforcement. Social security numbers are being sold by the millions, and your child's number may end up being used by illegal immigrants, or to get health insurance, which can impact your own health records. When you lose credit cards, you need to file a 7-year fraud alert because your initial one will only last 90 days. Try to close out all your unused accounts. And there are measures that can help prevent identity theft. Use cash rather than cards, shred your junk mail, keep personal documents hidden, including your social security card, don't place outgoing bills in your own mailbox, for the male person to see, ignore emails allegedly from banks, and monitor bank accounts. The Wednesday session, page 34, ended with a discussion of quiet car issues by Eric Bridges, ACB Governmental Affairs Director. Our legislation, H.R. 734 and S. 841, is pending, and its need for passage may depend upon whether the Department of Transportation follows through on a development plan of immediate action. Otherwise, we'll move ahead. This plan is due in January 2010. Eric praised us for all of our past efforts, and told us that only with continued advocacy will we succeed in the future. One of the can't-miss events of the convention, the third annual ACB auction, was held Wednesday evening. The auction raised more than $24,000, and, whether you work as an auctioneer, as does one of us, or just fight off other bidders as does the other, or even just listen to the craziness all around, we can guarantee you that all had a roaring good time. On Thursday we were honored to hear by telephone from Kareem Dale, a blind attorney, who is serving as President Obama's assistant on disability policy. He works in the Office of Public Engagement, which involves making sure that people with disabilities are integrated into all major national policy discussions, such as healthcare reform. He also works on the Domestic Policy Council. Kareem feels that the president has done more than any of his predecessors to include persons with disabilities in formulating policy and making sure that their needs will be met, whether in education, technology, or housing. The president is also making strong moves in ensuring that more individuals who are blind or have other disabilities are appointed to important government positions. He is committed and has already moved towards full funding of the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Kareem noted that various appointments are being made, and the selection process for others, including the Commissioner of the Rehabilitation Services Administration, will soon commence. The President is committed to ensuring that state rehabilitation agencies do a better job of serving consumers. Mr. Dale stated that the Obama administration is very aware of ACT's telecommunications concerns and is working with us and our coalition partners on those issues. He also mentioned work on issues relating to accessibility to books and discussions he has had with the Reading Rights Coalition. He also stated that the president is very committed to the United Nations Treaty on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And in fact, the news was released only a few days later that this treaty would be submitted to the Senate for ratification. He also informed us that deafblind students were able to see. Page 35. The President, in the Oval Office. That morning's proceedings included another phone call, of a far different vintage, but no less important. The convention program contained a page devoted to ACB heroes, but it was written as a memorial page. As you can guess, Kathy Skivers, who was included in that page, was surprised to hear about her demise, and it was decided to give her the chance to set the record straight. Melanie Brunson, ACB's executive director, followed Kathy and spoke of the increased interaction with the White House for ACB and the disability community and expressed her hope that this would translate into the policy arena. She spoke of the ACB office moves of both the D.C. office into Arlington, Virginia, and the Minneapolis office into the suburbs. She spoke of the mid-year unveiling of a page 36 plaque that will be displayed in the Arlington office to honor major financial contributors to ACB. Melanie mentioned our various efforts to expand the reading rights of persons with disabilities, and, most especially, those who are blind or visually impaired with respect to e-books, including the Kindle to Problems and other issues. She also discussed our work to improve enforcement of Section 508 of the Rehabilitation Act, which requires the federal government to make its websites and software accessible, including our efforts with the Department of Veterans Affairs. She then mentioned Eric Bridges, ACB Governmental Affairs Director, work as a member of the Consumer Advisory Committee to the Federal Communications Commission. Melanie stated that the mid-year meetings and ACB legislative seminar, for 2010 will be held on February 19th to 23rd. Mike Bodino then gave the treasurer's report. Reductions in various expenses and bequests have enabled ACB to have black ink both in 2008 and so far this year. Moreover, we have been able to increase our reserves substantially during the past 2 years. Our 2008 excess income was $380,684, and we have an excess income of $50,000 for the first 5 months of 2009, which bodes extremely well for the year. Next, Carla Ruscival, convention coordinator, gave her report. She recognized the outstanding work of the Florida Host Committee and the National Committee. Even in this down economy, we managed to keep sponsorships at the same level as last year. Moreover, youth participation doubled over last year. Various other reports were given during the Thursday session, including Chris Grace, who gave a report on the American Center on Blindness and Visual Impairment. As president of its board, he reported that the center now has a permanent governing structure, and it can begin to work on its very long-term goal of establishing the center itself, which would be a facility in the Washington, D.C. area, to serve a variety of needs for persons with visual impairments, including a home for ACB. Larry Turnbull, the dynamic volunteer head of ACB Radio, reported on its activities. He recognized the number of individuals who play such a large part in making it so successful. He talked about the incredible listenership growth in ACB Radio and the high expectations for the future. He'd like more affiliates and individuals to do their own shows. Mike Garrett, ACB board member, reported on ACB Enterprises and Services at the corporate page 37 entity that handles the ACB thrift stores. We are working on improving the image of these stores to create a better buying environment. Expansion is a long-term goal. The good news is that this year has been better than last. Friday, the last day of the convention, is always a busy day, as it includes both the business meeting and the convention banquet. All of the ACB officers, President Mitch Pomerantz, First Vice President Kim Charlson, Second Vice President Brenda Dillon, Secretary Marlene Lieberg, and Treasurer Mike Bodino were re-elected without opposition. Mr. Godino is serving his last term, while the others can run for a final term in 2 years. A series of constitutional amendments was passed, most of which were not substantive. However, one series of amendments was adopted that modifies the process for removal of ACB officers and directors by, among other things, giving page 38 a role to the entire membership in the commencement of this process. In addition, the president is appointing a task force to look at the ACB bylaws that relate to ACB standing committees in order to determine what changes should be made to the structure. The rest of the business meeting was devoted to consideration of resolutions. As we always do, CCB sent a few resolutions to the convention and others came from its members. One of our resolutions, aimed at improving the usability of the Duxbury Braille software, was defeated, but, nonetheless, CCB is pursuing that on our own. We were, however, successful with other resolutions. Resolution 2009-13, based upon a CCB resolution, seeks to increase the accessibility of national parks to those who are blind or visually impaired. Two other resolutions of note began with the work of CCB members. Resolution 2009-07 concerns our support for H.R. 571, which would undo changes in the law that resulted in devastating revenue decreases from vehicle donations, which have seriously harmed not only CCB and other ACB affiliates, but many other nonprofits throughout our nation. Resolution 2009-08 concerns the problems with the shared space concept, which is gaining momentum in this country and Europe, where cars, bikes, and pedestrians share the same space in one nice, happy family setting. Other resolutions adopted at the convention concern topics such as video description, musical related and distance learning software, schools for the blind, healthcare reform, insulin pumps, and our quiet car and telecommunications legislation. The Braille Forum, ACB's monthly magazine, will provide you with a detailed report on these resolutions. The ACB banquet is always a time to unwind, have some fun, and wrap up the convention. Door prizes and raffles galore, hilarity, and a wonderful speech by Miss Mary Ann Diamond, President, World Blind Union, Kooyong, Australia, highlighted the event. She gave a fascinating summary of the activities of the World Blind Union. In many ways, this report barely scratches the surface when it comes to describing an ACB convention, the numerous special interest workshops and meetings for students, attorneys, social workers. Page 39. Teachers, guide dog users, and so forth, the large exhibit area, the great tours in which you can participate, our international guests which, this year, included individuals from Canada, South Africa, Iran, and Vietnam, and most of all the time spent seeing old friends and making new ones, will make your convention experience so much richer. When the gavel comes down on next year's convention, at the new Sheraton Hotel in Phoenix, July 10th to 17th, 2010, we certainly hope that you can be a part of this great event. Let's make sure that all of ACB knows who has the biggest and best state affiliate in our great organization.